Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. This is going to be a pretty unique show. I have a guest this morning, Gib Larson, who I've known for years. I mean, he's portrays sometimes in different events. He's a mountain man. He could be a Viking. He could be a Scottish Highlander, and in full regalia, it is all and all. Every time he's, you know, it's to a T and it's all authentic. So, good morning, Gib. How you doing?
Good morning.
We're going to be talking about a subject that I touch on with some of my writings and every now and then about living off the land around here. You made a statement one time when we were talking, and you said back in before we were really developed, a Native American brave could walk from North Dakota to Mexico and never leave home with nothing more than its bedroll because he had food all the way along the trail.
Yes, it's out there. You just don't know what you can eat.
And you want to make sure what you know you're picking, you can actually eat it.
Before you ever start, well, I call it eating weeds, but before you start, you should get a book and study it because there are plants that'll kill you.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, you see these nice little berries, but they're poison ivy. Rabbits eat them.
Yep.
So just because an animal eats them doesn't mean they're good for you.
I remember in one of the survival training things I had taken years ago, they talked about, you know, you look and see what the animal's eating, and that means it might be possible for you to eat, but it's not a guarantee.
No.
You said, you know, get a book, study on it. Do you have one you would recommend?
Yes, I do. It's a field guide for North American edible wild plants. And I told Rick to put it in his newspaper article, the website where you can find one. And I looked them up, and they're anywhere from $14 to $27, depends on where you buy them.
Right.
But what this is, well, these are some of the things that you can eat, like cattails. Cattails, it's unbelievable.
They're can cover about everything. They're like the buffalo.
Yeah, they were, because you can start out in the spring with cattail sprouts, and you snap them off and eat them. They're kind of like eating asparagus, really, almost like or celery. They develop, then you get the top of the stems. You can pop them off. They're in a sheath, and it's like eating corn on a cob.
Little tiny. Pull the sheath off, boil it, and strip it with your teeth.
Well, boil it in salt water, and then just put it between your teeth and pull it out and strip it off. And it's kind of like a small kernel of corn. Yeah. Actually, well, it's like a small cob of corn. Then after they bloom, you can take the pollen, and I mixed it with flour and make muffins.
Now, I've never tried that. That sounds interesting.
The pollen, when they're blooming, that's above where what you see is normally, as you think of a cattail, it's above that, the part where the pollen is.
Right.
And, of course, that cattail is fabulous fire-start equipment. When it dries, it's really good.
I've used that, and
and then in the fall, you can get the roots. Basically, you could dig them anytime. Dig out the roots. They're kind of fibrous, but you can cook them and eat them. They're the same weight equivalent of cattails, has more starch in them than potatoes do.
Mm-hmm.
What I do, I take the wash them all off, get them nice and clean, and then mash them, and it comes out white. I think of it as like cornstarch.
Mm-hmm.
Mix it with your soup.
Right, and thicken it up.
The most fabulous place you could be is a cattail marsh with muskrats.
I remember this statement.
Because you've got meat and potatoes.
Yep.
Right there.
Got everything you need, pretty much.
And among other things is the cactus pods, the pancake cactus, the pods on it, in the fall they turn red, the seed pods. Don't pick them without gloves. because I'll guarantee you there are stickers like
little spines all over them. Yeah.
I take a pair of gloves, take a hold of the, pop them off the cactus, take the end of it, and just scrape it with a knife all the way around to get all the stickers off. I compare it to raspberry jelly.
I love raspberry jelly.
Oh, so. I mean, my grandmother was a homesteader, and she said they used to take those and make jelly.
And your grandparents homesteaded somewhere up around Arnold, right?
Arthur,
okay.
Well, one side was south, way east of Arthur, and the other was southwest of Arthur.
Okay.
There's definitely sand in my craw. I mean, I was born in the sand hills, and I love them.
The people that came through, homesteaded this ground, that was a tough group of people. That I'm always impressed with what they did and what they were able to accomplish with what little they had in most cases.
Well, yeah, if they were. I mean, you have all kinds of arrowheads. The leaf of it looks like an arrowhead. They have little pods underneath, like potatoes. I think they're called Irish potatoes. They're real small.
Mm-hmm.
That's about what they're like. And I have a special place for this. Is kind of my own little secret, and I'm not going to tell anybody where it's at. But, it is a large place. Go up in the fall, go out, and you just take your toes in the mud, and you can just keep working, and they'll float once you break them loose.
Oh, really?
And they taste like potatoes. Yeah, my daughter was over at my house last night, and we were talking about this. Oh, yeah, she said, I remember what they're like, because, I mean, I fed my family with them. They're called duck potatoes. That's what they kind of referred to them as, but they're around here. Another one you can eat, this is unbelievable, soapweeds. I take the blossoms.
Yucca plant, yeah, soapweed.
When they bloom and pop the center out of the blossom and eat it, it's kind of, I'd say probably a cucumber would be closest to what it tastes like.
I've done a similar thing, not the center of it, but I've taken the petals and eaten them, and cucumber would be a good description of that.
Yeah, if ranchers listen to this, the last thing you want is your milk cow to eat those blossoms because it will taint the milk. So, but for as far as eating, they're good.
The yucca plant was one of those that both the Native Americans that were here and then the pioneers that were here, they could get a lot from that one plant.
Well, the Indians would make basically like a sandal. By weaving the stems of a soapweed together and make a sandal. Watercress is another one that grows around this area. I mean, all these things I'm mentioning, I can tell you exactly where I would go for each one of them because I know where they're at.
And when you're out and about, if you know what to look for, they're not hard to find.
No, but it's the idea, don't go out and just start picking stuff because you could get the wrong thing.
Have you ever seen the movie Into the Wild?
It's
about a young man that thought he was going to go live off the grid, and he went to Alaska and ultimately ate the wrong berries and died from it.
Like I say, there's berries on poison ivy, but you sure don't want to eat them.
No.
Another one is sumac.
Yeah.
You take sumac in the fall when they're blooming, and I'd take them and crush them.
Crush the leaves or the
berries? The berries.
Yep.
Crush it. And I use I didn't use it, but it's like material for a pillowcase. Put them in there and make tea out of them. That way you keep them in that bag, you know, so it's like a tea bag, so you don't end up with all the gunk in there. But you can throw that away, but it makes a pink tea.
What does that taste like? I've never tried that.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of, that's kind of like eating animals, you know, like beaver. To me, beaver tastes like the dark meat on turkey.
Yeah.
It, you know, things you would, this brings up a thought. A survival sergeant says, the difference between a great meal and a good meal is 2 weeks without food. In 2 weeks,
everything
you won't
tastes
be
good.
So quite so picky about what you're eating in 2 weeks.
We had a lot of survival training, and we were actually in the Sonoran Desert. And do you know how to make a freshwater still in the desert?
Yes.
With the plastic and
with
stuff
the
like
plastic.
That? We had done that, and of course, anything that falls in to the well there, you can catch. And the nastiest thing I ever had to eat, and in desert survival, you don't cook anything because you want the water in it too. Gila monster.
Yeah.
Gila monster eats carrion, and the old saying, you are what you eat, is very true. God, that was the nastiest thing. And after one bite, I decided I can go a few more days.
One of the things in survival, if you're cooking meat, you know, you see this guy cooking a rabbit over a fire on a stick. No. Take the rabbit, crush the bones, cook him in a pot.
Yeah.
Because then all the nutrition stays in that liquid.
Doesn't drip off.
And you're getting it all. And if you're cooking him on a stick, you're losing some of the nutrition right there. An odd thing was, the mountain men basically lived on meat. But they eat, and the Indians did too, but they ate a lot of meat that wasn't, well, basically I'd say it was almost raw.
Yep.
They never got scurvy. The miners came, killed the same animals, cooked them, and got scurvy.
And that took the vitamin C out of it?
They do. They, when they cooked it,
yeah,
they lost, and they got scurvy. But by eating this meat, they could stay alive.
I've got a listener that just texted in, says, tell me the name of that book again.
Okay. It's Edible Wild Plants. Well, actually, it's Field Guide to North American Edible Wild Plants. The editors are Ellis, E-L-I-A-S, and Dykeman, D-Y-K-E-M-A-N. And I've looked on the internet, and this one I've got, I bought way back when Outdoor Life had a book club, and that's where I bought it. So you know how old it is. It's probably in the 70s. But
well, you've taken pretty good care of it.
There's a new edition of this. Because I looked it up on the internet, and there is a new edition of it.
Are you familiar with the Foxfire books?
Yes, I am.
That's another great one. They
had
one.
Yeah, Foxfires are.
I was a ardent student of Elliot Wigington when he did that, up until the fact that he got busted. He was an English teacher somewhere in Appalachia and started this project, having his kids come in and tell about how their parents and grandparents and stuff did things. That's how those books came about. And I bought every one. I think I had up to nine.
I've got all of them.
I had up to 9 or 10. And then when he got busted for molesting his students, I figured he's not getting another dime from me. So, but
well, by then I probably already had all of them.
Yeah, probably had. But he, those were a great one. And you're old enough, Gibb. I'm old enough. Corey probably remembers it. Remember Yule Gibbons?
Yes.
Tastes like wild hickory nuts.
Branford Anger is another one.
Don't know him.
A good one.
Branford Anger.
I've got a library of basically survival books of every kind you could think of. I mean, as I used to tell the guys at work, if things fell apart and you guys are starving to death, I'm going to be fat because I'm going to be eating roots. You say, I'm not going to eat roots. Do you eat carrots?
Yeah, they're
potatoes,
roots.
Potatoes?
Yeah.
They're roots.
Absolutely.
The only difference is even grass roots, you can eat them if you wash them off. And basically, it's like I say, you know, 2 weeks without food, and you're going to be eating whatever then. Don't be so picky.
Another thing, that's old Gunny that was teaching us some of our survival school, he said, other than what the Corps issued you, he said, the only thing else you should carry in your pack is Kool-Aid. Get some Kool-Aid and put it in there, because that'll mask the taste of the iodine and the halazone with your water purification. And he said, Tabasco. Carry a bottle of Tabasco. And I know that he waited every time. God knows how long he'd been doing this class, but he waited until somebody said, Gunny, what's the Tabasco for?
And kill his taste.
His answer was, son, you can eat a roadkill with enough Tabasco. He's right. But anyway, we need to take a quick break here, Gib, and then we'll come back and finish up with some more. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back. We're talking with Gib Larson this morning. We're talking about all things edible out in the wild, kind of. It's like we were joking off air about, you know, the old Yule Gibbons thing. Things like taste like wild hickory nuts. Quick question for you, Gib. If you left the studio right now, how far do you think you'd have to walk before you could find something to eat?
Well, I'd have to get to the river. No, I wouldn't either. I probably could do... I'd find something closer than that.
Yep.
That, because I could eat the roots, but yeah, I'd try to get to a river because where there's water, because then I'd have the food that I wanted. But oak trees, red oak, they have a lot of tannin.
Right.
Tannin is what that's where the word tanning came from.
From tanning hides, yeah.
Yeah, you use that tannin to tan hides. You have to leach those two or three times before you can eat, they're edible. Bur oak, which I have in my yard, you can eat.
Which parts do you eat?
The nut.
The nut, okay.
Yeah. If I can beat the squirrels. Because they love them, but bur oak, there is a difference between the two trees. Not all the oaks are edible, but some of them, like I say, have a lot of tannin in them.
Well, you always hear, particularly like deer hunters, they're always looking for what they refer to in the books as mast crops.
Yeah.
And the mast is the nuts.
Yes.
And depending on the type of tree it is, the deer love that.
But another one that is rose hips.
Okay.
You got them in your yard.
Probably.
After the roses bloom in the fall, then I've taken those berries and you can use them to make like tea. Now, the rose is of the same family as the apple.
Okay, I did not know that.
So that kind of tells you where you're at there.
Right.
But I just take the rose hips. Again, I take it like a little sack, you know, cloth sack, put them in, crush them and put them in it, and make tea.
Tea was something that was done quite often, and not only just for the flavor, but had many medicinal values to it.
Well, you've got all the stuff in there. I've been told that a cup of rose hips is equal to an orange in vitamin C.
I can believe that.
So whatever you got there, you know, these people would starve to death, and they're right on top of a bunch of food. They just don't know how to use it.
True.
That's the whole thing.
True.
Now, actually, if somebody wanted to contact me, and I would help them get the right books and make sure that, well, I'd even try to help them with some of it as far as going out and see what we could find. But
how would they get a hold of you? Give them a phone number or something.
Well, Well, 539-0727. My house is real easy to find.
Yes, it is.
You go west on highway, or on west on Phillips, till you get to Carr. At my house is a Scottish flag. The only one I know of, and I've never seen another one anywhere.
You got the Scottish flag, and then you're also flying an Israeli flag.
Well, I don't have this. The Israeli flag is up there now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got an Israeli flag there. I mean, it's really
There's a whole fine. Different story there.
Yes. But, yeah, if somebody is interested, I'd help them.
Do you still get out and talk to different groups if they
No, I don't much anymore. Well, I've had severe medical problems. I mean, like I tell people, I'm like an Indian. I take a lot of killing. Because I've got 9 stents and an artificial heart valve.
You told me one time you were like the stent of the month club.
Yeah. Well, with 9 stents, it's just about that bad.
Well, God bless you and keep going, Gib.
Well, like I say, I take a lot of killing.
Good deal. What else? What if you go just going out one day and you know what you're going after for your favorite wild food? What is it?
I would go after the duck potatoes.
Okay. I know a couple places I need to go look for those.
Well, I can tell you where there's an area probably of a full acre of them. Nothing but duck potatoes.
Once you got them up and out of the mud, how do you cook them?
Just like you do potatoes.
Just okay.
Either bake them or, you know, you can... Well, I don't think you could peel them. Because they're kind of like... Well, they're different, but I always bake them. And then just ate them that way.
Okay.
A guy could put them in coals in a campfire and cook them that way.
Are you familiar with the writer Patrick F. McManus?
He was a
humorist, and he talked about potatoes in the fire. He said you'll get those, and he said sometimes, you know, just the outside kind of gets warmed up, and they're not very good. And he said then you get ones that you, by the time you peel off all the burnt part of it, there's just a little pea size bit at the bottom. He says, those are known as cooked through.
To give you an idea, my partner that I used to rendezvous with at the rendezvous, I gave him the name of Pat McManus's dog, Strange.
Strange, yep. That was his name?
And that's, well, he was known at the rendezvous as Strange because Leroy Brindle was his name. And Leroy is a great guy. But he is just a little bit strange. I mean, he was actually, I think he has a very high IQ. He was a computer maintainer. But at a rendezvous, you'd never know it.
Pat McManus, I had the honor of meeting him twice and visiting with him and corresponding with him. Just a phenomenal guy with the storytelling ability that he had.
I bought one of his books, and it was about Strange. And Strange was in the hospital.
You only have one of his books?
Well, I had that one, but I don't have that one because I gave it to him to read when he was in the hospital.
Ah.
And he, when I walked into the, I came back and I walked into the room, and I'm not going to say it on the air what he called me. He says, name me after a worthless dog.
I did a very similar thing. I had an uncle that had some serious health issues and had to go in the hospital, and I sent him one of Pat McManus's books. The title of the book was They Shoot Canoes, Don't They?
Yeah.
You remember that one? The medical staff took the book away from him because he was laughing so hard they thought he would damage some of the sutures and stuff that he had. When my boys were young, That was a family event. We would read the Pat McManus stories, and the kids would listen and just laugh and stuff. It'd take us an hour to get through a short story. We're about out of time, Gib. You want to come back someday?
Well, I don't care.
Okay. Well, that's it for this week, folks. Stay tuned, or tune in next week for another edition of the Outdoor Connection.